Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And welcome to Following On County Cricketer, the last show before we take a month-long hiatus. We'll be back, though, at the start of September. And you're listening either on TalkSport 2, on the Following On podcast feed, or indeed on the Cricketer Magazine's website. Looking back at an absolutely ridiculous 4 days of county cricket. To be honest with you, I need a pause for breath after the last three games. It's been some incredible cricket up and down the country, so we're going to be reflecting on all that. And taking your questions as well here on Following On County Cricketer. Okay, Harmy, well, look, I don't know about you, but look, it's been a busy week. I've been covering the T20s between England and South Africa for Talk Sport and Talk Sport 2. I've been looking after the kids. Summer holidays, of course, have just got underway. So suddenly life's a lot more hectic. But wherever I've been, whatever I've been up to, I've had one eye or one ear on the county championship because this is shaping up to be some season. I got a message from my mate, Josh Milligan, who used to produce a breakfast show yesterday evening, saying, can you not please stop winning games? He's a huge Hampshire fan. Obviously, Hampshire were tipped to win the title earlier this season by Nick Friend and also George DeBell, who aren't with us this week. You quite fancied Surrey. I wasn't ever going to tip Surrey, but tell you what, Surrey have conjured up three wins. You know, they gave up 500 against Yorkshire and won. They were 140 for seven in first innings after Essex had hit 280 and won. And they started the day on day four, Warwickshire, 240 ahead, I think, 220 ahead, six wickets in hand. And then Kumar Roach and possibly a little bit of fortunate umpiring. And then the most comfortable chase of 240 you'll ever see. And it's three wins out of three. But for a lot of, I'm not sure if you're aware, because I was following the Hampshire game. Oh, by the way, don't rule out Lancashire as well, who also conjured up a come from behind win against Kent. But I'm not sure if you were following it in the same way I was. But the Yorkshire game, the Yorkshire-Hampshire game and the Surrey-Warwickshire game for about 3 days were almost identical. The second innings, or third innings, I should say, for Yorkshire and Warwickshire had them essentially dropping wicket, losing wickets and leading Hampshire and Surrey by an almost identical score right up to the end of day three. Then Hampshire rolled through Yorkshire. Warwickshire got through to close as play, four down. I thought, that's it. Surrey are going to draw that game. You know, they're going to have to bat it out to draw. Hampshire are going to chase down the 200 odd, which they did. Lancashire had come back by that point. I'm thinking, oh man, three-way tie at the top here. And then Surrey conjured up, that spell by Kumar Roach, four wickets in six overs. This has been an amazing, amazing county championship. Actually, I'm not that bothered that there's a bit of a break because I'm not sure I can take much more of this. It's been ridiculous.
Yeah, it has. And the Surrey win was an unbelievable win. But that's what you pay your overseas for. You know, that's it. During my time, you play against the overseas, he makes a difference. I think the overseas are a little bit different now. It's a little bit more diluted because of, obviously, franchise cricket around the world. The big overseas don't come to England to play red ball cricket as much as what the big hitters from international cricket do. But Surrey have got one. They've got a big hitter. He doesn't play franchise cricket. one of the greatest bowlers of modern generation on a wicket which looked as though there wasn't much difference between the outfield and the wicket they played on. There was a little bit of green grass on the wicket there at the Oval. And Kemar Roach, he's a superstar, isn't he? He's a great man, but he's a great bowler as well when you give him the conditions, and he did that. He was the wickets, some of the wickets and the deviation off the surface was perfect for Kemar. So it was a good win for Surrey. I think they needed it because of the way sort of Hampshire, I think Yorkshire look as though they've just run out of steam a little bit. Stephen Patterson's resigned last night as four-day captain. That would have hurt Stephen, knowing him as I do. He's a good friend of mine. That would have hurt him because he loved that job, leading some of these, you know, these young players out for Yorkshire. And you're right, don't rule Lancashire out. Lancashire play Yorkshire, the Roses, next round of county championship matches. I think it's on the 5th of September. Yeah. I don't think Surrey...
It's
I don't
a
think
big
Surrey
edge. Gloucestershire... No, they're not. Gloucestershire play Somerset at the bottom of the table. So that's a bit of a derby going on.
Hampshire play Yorkshire.
Yeah, Yorkshire versus Lancashire. Yorkshire, as you said, they're not... A defeat in that is going to be a little bit squeaky bum. Not that we know what the divisions are going to look like next year or what everyone's playing for. But yeah, I mean, those two fixtures just at the top, well, not quite the top of the bottom, but certainly Lancashire at the top. And I'm not sure Yorkshire can afford another defeat. And then Gloucestershire, Somerset. But yeah, sorry, carry on. You were saying about the Yorkshire-Hampshire game.
Yeah, the Yorkshire-Hampshire game sort of fluctuated either way. Nobody really wanted to get a hold of it. And I thought, you know what? Third innings, moving day, 272. That's a score. That's a look as though that was a score that might be challenging, you know, fourth innings. But you're also looking at it and thinking, you know, 159 plus 218, is the pitch getting better and better? And will it be easier, a fourth innings chase? And it looked as though that was the way it was. A huge partnership, I think it was, later on in that first innings of the Hampshire game by Ben Brown and Keith Barker. There were 70 for 7, I think. There was 70 for 7 at one point. So that was massive, but that's what good teams do. The good teams, you know, they find a way of keeping themselves in the game. When they've grounded the team that's doubting themselves a little bit, things aren't going so well, i.e. what's happening at Yorkshire, then, you know, the top team comes through in the end on day three, day four and finishes the job off. And that's what Hampshire did. I think Lancashire look a good, you know, they look as the side that could be the ones that challenges. If one of the top teams sort of fall by the wayside and falter, I think Lancashire will challenge the other, either Hampshire or Surrey. Probably will be Surrey to the championship, because Hampshire, you know, Lancashire are a very, very good side. They've got good bowling stocks. Young Bailey, what did he get? 11 wickets in the match. Great signing, Washington Sundar, for the back end of the season.
Let's not forget, Surrey aren't the only ones with an overseas pro. 3 wickets for Washington Sundar. And I don't think that Carl Abbott... I know he's not an overseas, he's Kolpaka. Actually, no, he's not. Actually, how does Carl Abbott... Is he overseas now? I guess he is. Mohammed Abbas is overseas as well.
Yeah.
So the overseas players for Hampshire as well, doing the do.
But whether he's overseas or not, he has played international cricket for another country, and he is very, very handy when it comes to bowling and wickets that have got conditions. And Mohammed Abbas is... you give him a wicket which has got a little bit in it, and there's not many better than Mohammed Abbas trying to challenge the inside, the outside edge of the bat in and around that off stump. And I think that relentlessness between Abbott and, what did they get, 9? They got 16 wickets between them in that match against Yorkshire. So it's been another good round. Durham, my team, you know, 421 in the first innings. Young Michael Jones, good young player. Yeah, Durham stuck with him through some good times and some challenging times. He goes at the top of the order, and it's not an easy place to bat is Chester Street because the ball always does a bit at the top of the order. And he got a double 100, and I'm pleased for him because he's a good player. I think he's a very, very good player. And yeah, they had Middlesex up against it for a large proportion of that game. Early part of that game, but I think there was 160 runs for the last 3 wickets in that innings of 455, which then just made the game just peter out into a boring draw. So Chris Rushworth got 600 first-class wickets during that game, which is a very, very good achievement. And looking around the rest of the groups, there were some notable big contributions. Young Dahl at Derbyshire. What a match he had. 171 runs and 6 for 75 against Worcester. So, yeah, good. There's been some good performances this week.
Well, there has. And what's really interesting with the Division 2 is that Middlesex are in a little bit of trouble. I think, let's have a look at the fixtures, because I think Glamorgan have to play both Derbyshire and Middlesex still to come. Nottinghamshire are where we always expected them to be. They've eased ahead. They look certain to be promoted if there is promotion at the end of the year. But 10 points separated Middlesex in second and Derbyshire in fourth. And Glamorgan, who are third, have got to play Middlesex and Derbyshire. So I think Durham's chances of promotion, unfortunately, they needed to win that game, really, didn't they, to have any outside hope. But that's fascinating. And I tell you what, the Mickey Arthur, you know, rejuvenation of Derbyshire is very quietly continuing, even though, you know, he's not having Shan Massoud to rely on.
Yeah, and I spoke to Ian Bell about Mickey Arthur, and no, Mickey Arthur's been a good friend to TalkSport. We've had Mickey on in a wide range in tracksuits. I think we've had him on in his Pakistan tracksuit, we've had him on in his Sri Lanka tracksuit. I think we've even had him on in his Derbyshire tracksuit. And when he signed to be Derbyshire coach, I was like, what's he going to Derbyshire for? I mean, Goffey got the director's cricket job at Yorkshire, and then we're having a conversation with Goffey and on a Monday night, talking about when I was sort of in the start of January, and it was like, how good would Mickey Arthur be here? Because he is an unbelievable coach. It's like one of the sort of top Premier League coaches. Not so much to the Guardiola.
David Moyes.
Yeah, but going to a championship club and you're going, what's this? But in a lower end championship club. Yeah, very decent in white ball cricket, but there've been a little bit of a shambles in red ball cricket. And you're going, why has he gone there? And then you see the transformation. And I was talking to Belly about, because me and Bell went in as a batting consultant, and he only went, and he said this to me, Ian Bell only went because of Mickey Arthur. He said he had other offers, but he said, I only went to work with Mickey Arthur. And that was because of the amount of experience that he's got. Belly's trying to sort of get into the coaching world. He said, I thought it would be good to work with Mickey Arthur. And he said he didn't disappoint. He said he was unbelievable. The way he runs the ship, runs the show, the way he speaks to players, the way he makes sure the players are, he says he's a little bit old school, but he makes sure the players have got what they need to execute their skills. And he drives them forward and he pushes them. And you just got to look at the way Derbyshire have gone this year. You know, they've been bottom end rung of most tables for the last few years, and he has now transformed them into a club who, I think, if they had Shan Massoud all summer, they might have had an outside chance of just grabbing that sort of second or third spot. But yeah, it looks like they're just falling by the wayside a little bit. Got a lot of older players who potentially, back end of the summer, getting tired bodies. But look, I think they've had an excellent season, and I think that the driving force of Mickey Arthur has a lot to do with that.
Mate, they've got three matches left. Two at home. One against your boys, Durham. One against Leicestershire, who are bottom. And then a huge game away at Glamorgan. They've still got a chance, you know. They've got a big chance.
Yeah, but Glamorgan's got a game in hand now. They play Worcester next. Worcester have got nothing on it. Glamorgan, if they get any decent points total, then you're looking at Derbyshire being sort of half a game behind Middlesex, who would be third, and probably a full game behind Glamorgan if they win that game in hand. With three games left, I think that's just, if it was five games left, then you'd say they've got a chance. I just think Derbyshire might be half a game behind. We're talking about 8-10 points behind. Notts ain't getting caught. Nobody's catching Notts. They're up and away,
no,
I think.
No, not so.
Yeah, so it'll be a case of Middlesex Glamorgan. I can't see both of them making a mess of it to bring Derbyshire back into play. One of them might make a mess of it and Derbyshire might finish third. And to be honest, if you had a Derbyshire members and said, would you take finishing third in this league with the likes of Notts, Middlesex, Durham, I think you would say, yeah, from where we've been to where we are now, it's a good positive move forward. And I think next year, Mickey's still there. If nobody prizes him away with a lucrative franchise offer, then I think they'll get better and better because players want to come and sign for Mickey Arthur. That's why Masood's there. And I think there'll be a couple more next year that go, you know what, I'm going to go and play for Derbyshire because I want to work with Mick.
Yeah, I can see the appeal for a club like Derbyshire because I think Mickey Arthur's the kind of guy, he is a bit old school, he wants to, he's the kind of guy that he'll be having a chat with the tea lady on the way in, won't he? He'll be chatting with the guy that looks after the car park. You know, he's top to bottom kind of manager. He's not just interested in the cream, I suppose. He's not just interested in turning up on match day. He wants to be with the dog thrower out in the field. He wants to be watching all the second 11 games. He's such a cricket badger. It's ridiculous. And I suppose you wouldn't quite get that opportunity at a bigger club.
No, he reminds me so much of a man that I hold in so high regard as Jeff Cook. Got great values. And not only does he demand respect as the coach, but he demands you to respect the game and what the game stands for. And that seems to be the sort of Mickey Arthur way. He's a dying breed, unfortunately, in probably the modern day coaching. But he has got the values that he's had all his coaching career, I think, are the ones that he instills in some of his players, especially the ones that have been around him a long time. And I think not only does he respect, he commands respect off the players to himself, but he expects them to respect the game and it's done properly and it's done the right way. And I think that's why Derbyshire's got to where they've got to.
Where has it all gone wrong for Somerset this year? Because they're in a little bit of trouble. They do have a game against Gloucestershire coming up, you know, and they do have a game in hand over Warwickshire and Kent. But they can't afford for that gap between themselves in ninth and, say, Kent and Yorkshire in sixth and seventh to open up anymore. It's been a struggle for them. You know, they've got themselves into good positions at times. But, you know, only 2 wins from 10 matches... tells its own sorry story. I mean, they've lost five games. They're losing 1 in 2 for a team that were challenging not that long ago. That's a fall from grace, and they are in danger of getting relegated if relegation.
Yeah,
happens.
They are. They're very very close to being relegated, and if they don't sort of get any sort of positive points out of that game, then there's a good chance they will be relegated. Kent have got a game on them. If you're a Warwickshire fan, you'd be worried as well because they're down there. They're only sort of 5 points ahead of Somerset. So Somerset need to get some big points on the board in that game of hand to sort of leapfrog Warwickshire. I'm not sure where it's gone wrong for Somerset. I think Somerset members, you can sort of send us a message in and try to unravel what's happened. It, for me, looking from the outside, it looks as though they've struggled to get to win the whole game rather than... Again, this week, they've got 600 on the board. They've got 600 on the board and they can't bowl teams out. Or they get rolled over for 150, 200, and they can't knock teams over in that respect. So they either bowl well in a game or they bat well in a game. But it doesn't seem so far this season they've batted and bowled well in a sort of a collective unit. It's not as though one discipline's misfunctioning. You know, they've got some excellent bowlers who have took good wickets this year. Craig Overton's high up in the wicket takers. Peter Siddle, high up in the wicket takers. But they've also got some big run scorers high up in the run scoring charts as well. But as a team and a collective unit, they don't seem to be able to put 4 innings together as a whole consistently enough to win enough games to get them out of trouble. And that's something that, if I was a Somerset fan, I would be concerned, but I wouldn't be overly worried because there is going to be a game or two games where we put it all together and you'll get the points on the board. It's not as though we can't get 20 wickets all summer. We've struggled to get 20 wickets. That would worry me if I was a fan, because I'm thinking, well, we're not going to win a game, or we can't get 400 runs. Both disciplines individually are working, but they just so don't seem to be functioning all together as one to sort of get a victory in the championship.
Well, I've just had a quick look at their fixtures. They've got Warwickshire and Kent away, both of them away, still to play in the last four. I think one of the worries is that, you know, when you're going to be playing in September as well, you know, is weather going to play a part? When you've got such a close battle at the bottom of the table and a really close battle at the top of the table, you know, you don't really want wet, you know, rain in September for a week to be essentially deciding the championship. The other thing that, as a Surrey fan, it doesn't make any sense for them not to play Hampshire at Hampshire. And Surrey end up winning. Yep, they've beaten Hampshire at the Oval. Although why Hampshire put Surrey in, I don't think they'll ever really understand that. But it's a warp competition, and I just feel that it might be old school, but any tournament which doesn't involve every single team playing everybody else home and away, you know, well, that's just a knockout competition, essentially. It just seems a bit warped to me.
Yeah, but it just the calendar that we have, and there are going to throw up anomalies, and that's it. Look, as long as you know far enough out that this is what the roadmap of the season is going to be, you can plan accordingly. And if you accept them decisions when they're made, you can't moan about them if it doesn't go the way that you expect it to go. So I'm sure Stewie and Bats and everybody at the Oval, they know what's going on. They know the job in hand. They know what they've got to do. And I've not changed my opinion from the start of the season when we talked about who is going to win the championship. 1-11, Hampshire, I think, have got as good a side as Surrey. But if Surrey get all their players out on the park, I think they've got a bigger squad, a better squad than what Hampshire have got. And I think on the big occasion, when the pressure's on, I just think Surrey have got some, they've just got a little bit more. Will Ollie Pope be available for the back end of the county championship season when the test match is finishing? I think he will, looking at the way he's conducted his summer so far. He's wanted to go back and play for Surrey, so it wouldn't surprise me if he plays once the South African leg of the test series is done, and that'll be a huge, huge asset for Surrey. Slightly concerning that Jamie Overton walked off not being able to finish his first over. I don't know what the extent of that injury is, but with the season being not far away from finishing, that could be an end of season for Jamie. But if you've got Kemar Roach, you've got a match winner, the likes of Burns, yeah, and Amler, they've got
Topley to come back, and Curran. Both of those Curran will be available.
So big guns come back, Bats will be wanting to challenge them to say, look, you know, you've had a good summer with England, just finish the summer off. That's what Jeff Cook used to say to me. He did it in 08 and he did it in 09. Come back at the end of the summer, after not playing a great deal for England for a year and a bit. And then I went away and played a couple of test matches, and he come back and said, right, you've had your high. Now go and perform the way you would in a test match and help win these lads the championship. And that was my driving force. That was it. It was a great bit of psychology by Jeff. He just said, go and help win these lads the championship, because that's what international players do. And I'd like to think I didn't disappoint, because we won it twice.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Absolutely. Okay, let's get on to your questions. Here on Following On County Cricketer, it's time for the mailbag.
The mailbag.
Okay, well, you can't have a week, you can't have a mailbag, you can't have opening it up to the floor without somebody asking about James Vince. And Kevin Harper at Kev's Hat says, how has James Vince not even seen an England squad this summer, let alone played for England? I think it means the other way around. But look, at the end of the day, James Vince might be the Vitality Blast champion, county championship champion. He's a World Cup champion. He was part of the squad, wasn't he, in 2019? And didn't he score 100 the last time he played for England? What can we say about James Vince?
That hasn't been said millions of times before. I think he's a fantastic player. I think he's a very good leader. I think if the Ben Stokes leadership qualities weren't as strong, we might be talking about James Vince captain in England in the Test matches. But there was only one real candidate when Joe Root packed in, and that was Ben Stokes. But I think high up on the shortlist, even though he wasn't in a Test team, because the Test team, if we remember, at the start of the summer was a shambles, it might have been James Vince's name would have been in consideration with Rob Key. But where does he fit in? I don't see where he fits in, unfortunately. Number three, he's had his chance. It just seems that England don't really fancy him. They just think he's an unbelievable first-class cricketer. But at the Test level, he has got technical faults that possibly, because of the age he's at, and that's why Zach Crawley's getting a little bit more time, because he's a lot younger and hoping that he can develop and go through. This is not me sort of building the case for not picking James Vince. I'm trying to work out why they haven't gone back to him. And the only thing I can think of is that they believe that his technical deficiencies in international cricket, which were very, very similar every time he got out, nicking off just outside of stump, that they believe that, well, the selectors, selection panel believed that it was, he wasn't going to be able to change that, and he was always going to get that pretty 20, pretty 30, and then get out, which is something that England didn't need. Coupled with a little bit older, so they've gone down the route of looking past him in Test match cricket. I thought in one day cricket he had a chance. Like you said, when that whole team got replaced, Ben Stokes came in, Vince got 100 against, I think, Pakistan, I think it was. Was it Bristol? It was down in the sort of South, I'm sure it was down in the South Country. I'll be wrong, I'm sure I will be. But he got 100, and I thought, you know what, that might just sort of cement his place in the one day side for a while at that number three spot. But England have gone back to Joe Root, who you can't argue with, really. He's one of the best players that's ever played cricket for England. So I just think James Vince is always going to be feel aggrieved and unlucky that he's not got as many Test or international caps as he should have. But I would love to know what the honest answer is, but I'm just wittering on because I think James Vince is a fantastic player.
He's only 31 as well, you know.
But what, Zach, 25, 24, 25?
Yeah, no, I get I'm just saying. It's not 35.
Yeah, but if he's 31, is he going to be able to change? And the career he's had, his numbers are ridiculous. But can you change? Really, can you change that poking at a ball outside of stump? I think that's instinct. You know, is that technically you've got an issue there? And it's the same thing every time. Zach's got it. Zach's hasn't got long left before the push past Zach Crawley, because at the minute you bowl half volleys at him and he'll maybe belt you for three or four fours, but he's going to nick it and he's going to be out. So he's got to learn quickly now, or he could be, Zach Crawley could be very, very soon in the James Vince camp of, we think he's a very, very good player and his first class numbers will be ridiculous, but if he keeps getting out the same way with the modern technology we've got, well, there's no point picking him because we can't have somebody that averages 25 or 35, between 25 and 35.
Neil Abba, I'm not going to read out this whole tweet because it's a little bit offensive, but says, who made Butler captain of the short form of the game? The only time he performs is when he's been paid millions to play in the IPL.
No, I disagree with that. I think he's performed excellent. I think he's performed well for England.
He's taking over the England... Yeah, I agree. I know that when Owen Morgan was asked, I was at Lord's listening to him say that, and obviously he's being political, he's not going to say, yeah, Jos Buttler should be captain because he was stepping away from the team. But he was saying, you know, Mohamed Ali, Chris Jordan, Jos Buttler, there's lots of captaincy experience in there. But it was always going to be Jos Buttler. The thing that he's been paid millions to play in the IPL, I think, is a red herring. It's irrelevant. And actually, in some ways, you should take that as a justification for why he's the captain, because if he can perform in the pressure cauldron of the IPL, and don't think that's not easy runs in the IPL. You know, you speak to any overseas player who goes over there, if they pay big money for you, they expect big returns. The pressure is on immediately. We had Chris Gayle, remember the interview you did with Chris Gayle, which went out on the channel, and he's saying the pressure, even for Chris Gayle, he said the pressure at RCB, said it was just insane pressure. And I've heard that before. I remember Tamar Mills, I think it was Tamar Mills, and he came back, he said, you get there and you are made very aware very, very quickly, you've got to perform. So the fact that he's been paid millions and he has performed in the IPL shows he can do it. And you know, but I think that what we've got to remember with Jos is he's coming into an England white ball side that has essentially lost their captain and their identity in Owen Morgan, lost their all-rounder, certainly the 50-over game, in Ben Stokes. And if you look at the white ball side that won the World Cup in 2019, yeah, all the batters are pretty much there apart from Morgan, but none of the bowlers are, apart from Adil Rashid, who hasn't played, he missed a series himself for religious reasons. So let's judge Jos Buttler when he's got, can throw the ball to Jofra Archer, when he can throw the ball to Mark Wood, and when Adil Rashid and Mohamed Ali are both, you know, available, and we'll see how he's doing then.
Yeah, for me, there was only two choices for the England captaincy: Mohamed Ali or Jos Buttler. I think the rest in that white ball side didn't need the responsibility of captaining. Jos is a fantastic player. I feel sorry for Jos actually, because he got thrown a curveball because I don't think anybody really thought that Owen Morgan wouldn't go to at least one of the World Cups, i.e. the T20. So retiring, drop of a hat, bang, there you go, Jos, it's all yours now. I thought that's tough on Jos. Not because Morgan's sort of given him a hospital pass. I think you, as a captain, you can see things coming. You know, Michael Vaughan took over from Nasser Hussain. That was a 6 month transition period. You know, a lot of captains, you can see that they're going in end of the summer, end of the next series, end of whatever. I didn't really see, well, I don't think many people seen Owen Morgan, you know, walking away there and then. So you've again got to sort of think on your feet, get your plans going and try and get your head around the fact that you're captaining. As a player, I feel sorry for him because he's perfect to walk into this test team now. But unfortunately, for 52 test matches, he didn't score enough hundreds and he's not there anymore. The IPL, look, nobody, you don't think the price tags as an individual. You think of performing. You get a big price tag because you've performed. And I think that's what Jos has done over the course of his IPL career. He's gone for big bucks because he's performed and he's earned the big bucks, the right for the big bucks. When it comes to the one day side, I actually think when Brendan McCullum said, I'm taking the test team on, not taking the one-day team on, because it's going to be the hardest challenge. I actually disagreed with that. I actually think the one-day team was the harder team to take on, because the one-day team was one of the best in the world. The one-day team was going to have all the challenges of being favourites in a competition in bouncy surfaces in Australia and obviously slow turning surfaces in India to either be challenging for one of the top two places in the final, four places in the semi-final, and do that as the team is coming down from 2019 World Cup win. I actually think the one-day team was the harder team to coach because the standards were so high. The bar was such a high level that if it just dropped a little bit, then all of a sudden you're back in with everybody else. How do you keep that standard as high? And I think when Brendan said the test team wasn't very good, that was my biggest that would be my best challenge. I actually disagreed. I thought the one-day team was it. The test team was an easier team to go into for the simple fact is you change your mentality, you change your mindset, you start winning a couple of games, and the euphoria of, well, we're now not one from 17 anymore. And that's what Butler's got to deal with as England captain, that if England start dropping a little bit further down, the pressure that'll come on that he's not Owen Morgan anymore, I think that's a huge burden.
Now, one of the games that we didn't talk about in the roundup was a brilliant match involving Northants and Gloucestershire. Northants running out two wicket winners. And Tom Wade has asked us, how good a player for Northants and also South Africa is Ryan Rickleton? My word, what a remarkable talent. That was his final game for Northants. He's joining up with the South Africa squad. He's going to be playing in a test. He made his debut for South Africa at the start of the year. Now, it was interesting. He hit 95 in the first innings and really got Northants. They were set 208 in 33 overs or something. And he got them off to a blazing start in the second innings as well, 60-odd. Simon Kerrigan was a guest on the Cricket Collective, wasn't he, a couple of weeks ago? And he was highlighting, and actually it was Simon Kerrigan who hit the winning runs in that two-wicket win. He was highlighting what a gun Northants had got. And actually, that win pretty much safeguards Northants' position in the table as well. So he's another overseas pro that's done his job for his county.
He has, and you know, I was interesting to ask Simon Kerrigan. We had him on for about 15 minutes, and interesting to ask him about, because Neil Manthorpe talked about Northampton being the sort of the unfashionable, you know, the Moneyball group, which is the unfashionable, the unwanted, the place where people wash up that have struggled other places. But Northampton seem to sort of gel this group together, and they've got some good players. They've got players who have gone through testing times in their sort of careers and reborn at Northampton. And when they go down the overseas route, they tend to go for young, hungry South Africans. And it looks like they've got a good one here. What has he got? He averages 77 in first-class cricket. Highest score of 133. Largely down to his 95 in the first innings against Gloucester, that they were still being able to push the game and drive the game. And then, obviously, they've gone on and had a run chase. And, yeah, I think you're right. I think they have safely secured their place in whatever top division they're going to be next year. But it was a good game down at Gloucester. Interesting to see James Bracey batted number 5. Has a real struggle recently at number 3. He's gone down to number 5 and he got 79 in the game. But Ryan Rickleton will be somebody who not many people will know when it comes to the first test match against South Africa. But I think if he gets the nod and he plays against England, I think by the end of the summer, I think he might be a name on a lot of people's lips, because I think he's a talented boy. And having the experience of playing first-class cricket, this is his 8th match, will stand him in good stead. And if South Africa do pick him for the 3 test series against England, he'll be in decent form and he'll be acclimatised well to the conditions over here. So good luck to him.
Brilliant stuff. Okay, well, look, we're approaching the end of the show. We're going to have a little chat about the 100. And basically, we're following on county cricket is going to step aside for a month of August. No county cricket taking place. And basically, the format of this show just will not work with the 100. It's not a complete slight on the tournament. And of course, the Royal London One Day Cup again. The games come so thick and fast. By the time we record this and it's put out there, it'll be out of date. But let's just have a quick chat about the 100. A couple of things about the tournament. Gets underway on the 3rd of August. I actually tried to get tickets for my son at the Oval. Sold out. So, you know, they're doing something right. But there again, the Oval always sells out T20 Blast as well. But essentially, whether you like it or you loathe it, Harmy, it's in the schedule. We're going to have no international cricket for the next 3 weeks. They're clearing the decks. And that's how it's going to be for the next 5 years. It has to succeed, and succeed it will.
Yeah, it has to succeed. The ECB invested far too much money to get it going. I've said many times, I'm not a big fan, not of the 100, of what it entails, i.e. the collateral damage it's had on first-class cricket. I think, in isolation, I think it's fantastic. We've got new people watching. I've had so many people, can't remember who I sat next to. Oh, Jamie Weir from Sky. Not massive cricket fan at all, he said, but he took his two daughters to a game last year, and he said it was amazing. And I've heard that so many times by so many different people who have never been involved, never watched cricket that much. I took my kids, I took my daughter, me and my wife went. All that has been said, and they said I had an amazing time. And it is, it's great. It is a very, very good product. But the old fuddy-duddies like me will keep coming back to the fact that the collateral damage is what that disappoints me with the 100 and the rest of our domestic English calendar, because obviously we only play for 5.5 months in a year. We can't cram everything in. I think once the ECB have got the house in order, appointed a new chair, got a new chief executive or a permanent chief executive, and start running through what the priorities are in cricket over the course of the next 3 to 5 years, and then makes a roadmap of where everything fits in. I will not change my mind on the 100 because I still think the product is very, very good, but it will fit in better with a calendar, and then I think English cricket will benefit from that. New money coming into it, perfect. You know, the sixes and fours and the easy concept, the way that people can watch and understand the game is what we want. But I will stand by what I've always said. If the 100 stays in the calendar the way it is at this moment in time with four domestic competitions, then we've got it wrong. You know, we have got it wrong because we are so misfunctioning the rest of our game. So I think the important thing about the 100 is it's creating new money. It's creating new people coming in, but we have to make sure it fits in with what we are trying to achieve in this country, which is continuity of making sure all our international teams are best prepared and have got a huge pool of players to play from. And I think with a little tinker, it might work.
Brilliant stuff, Harmy. Well, I'm on holiday for a couple of weeks. You will be covering the 100 for Talk Sport. And then again, we'll be reunited in a couple of weeks' time when I go back on the international circuit. You'll be part of the breakfast show. And also, you're taking up your new role as Newcastle correspondent as well, doing some Newcastle reporting for TalkSport as well. So busy times for you. You go well. And yeah, thanks for all the time over the last hour or so. And thanks for listening to Following On County Cricketer.
Well, that's it for another edition of Following On. Thanks for listening. And if you ever have any ideas for guests or have questions for the likes of Steve Harmison or Neil Manthorpe, feel free to tweet me at Fulham John or via at @cricket_TS. And either I or one of the team will make sure that your questions are read out on the show at the earliest convenience. Also, please take the time to leave a review. And if you're already a subscriber, then tell your mates to do the same. And if you want more content from the likes of Steve Harmison, then head over to his YouTube channel and tell him I sent you. Thanks for listening to Following On.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here.
I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.